this is Justice Radio, a weekly show on WMPG with your hosts Mackenzie Kelly and Linda Small. Today we're talking again with Megan Reedy. She's a program coordinator for the Maine Humanities Council, and John Fortney, the former film screenings programmer for the Portland Museum of Art. Both are doing some amazing work inside Maine's prisons. But before we hear their stories, here's a little bit of information about our hosts.
I'm Mackenzie Kelly, a recovery coach and peer mentor coordinator of Healthy Acadia and the program director of Reentry Sisters.
And I'm Linda Small, a project coordinator with the Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition and ED of Reentry Sisters. Along with Mackenzie, we are an organization that specializes in helping women and girls return home from prison.
I'm John Courtney. I run Shelf Life, which is a book and resource distribution project for correctional facilities in Maine.
And hi, it's what a joy to be back. I'm Megan Reedy, as Linda said, program coordinator with the Maine Humanities Council and the current point person for our programming inside Maine prisons.
Hi, Megan and John. I'm just so glad that you guys are both here. Last time we scratched the surface of your programming inside Maine's prisons. Is there a relationship between Maine Humanities Council and the higher education in prison program?
That is such a great question, Mackenzie. It's a thing we think about a lot. There isn't. There's not a formal relationship between some of the really excellent and now pretty long-running college programming that's happening inside the prisons. I think a lot of that, as I understand it, is through the University of Maine at Augusta. But our programming is typically not housed alongside the education programming. Most of the folks, the staff that I work with are on the programming side, are not involved in the formal education stuff, which I realize sometimes I think, oh, that's a little counterintuitive. But for us, we see a real advantage to that. You know, the college programming is, you know, really, really, really valuable for folks who can access that, who have the sort of the foundations in their own education and experience to be able to go ahead and do that. This is our programming is a way that people find their way into realizing that they like to talk about literature with other people. And sometimes we see people go on into formal education. And it's also a place where people who have achieved quite a bit in their formal education get to share out things that they've come to know. So we're in the fertile periphery of the formal education system.
I love that, Megan. Thank you. That's a great segue into you, John, to tell us about Shelf Life. How did you come up with that? What is it like? And how are you helping the folks on the inside?
Yeah, thanks, Linda. I can't remember if we talked about this in the first episode, but like I had been doing programming at facilities, bringing in films and musicians and speakers prior to the pandemic. And then when the pandemic happened and all volunteer access got cut off, I was looking for a way to sort of remotely support people. And I, you know, just kind of came up with the idea, like maybe I can start like sending books inside, and that might be a way of like offering, you know, pandemic friendly support from the outside. It started really, honestly, I was culling a lot of my own books. I was looking, I had a lot of things. I'm like, I don't need to own all these. I started with a lot of mine and people I knew. And it's going on almost 5 years now, and it snowballed into this bigger collection. But like Megan said, we're talking about this when we're warming up in the green room about how interconnected a lot of all this work is, like with higher education, Maine Humanities, Shelf Life, some work that other organizations are doing that I think we're all have our nose down and we're all sort of like tilling in our rows out in the garden. And we're aware, like in the next row over, like I know that Megan's doing things and occasionally we pop our head up and we, you know, we see each other. But it's all part of this big field that is all like really related. So Shelf Life, I hope aspirationally is providing material support for higher education instructors that are coming in, for self-guided, you know, readers. I'm hoping that with some of the book clubs and the work that Maine Humanities is doing, like that ties into, you know, better equipped libraries and, you know, fresh content coming in. You know, we mentioned Reginald Dwayne Betts and Mackenzie mentioned in her initial question. He's, I think, someone definitely worth spending time with because he's a major thread that like ties through so many of these things. I don't know. Is it worth talking about Dwayne?
Yeah, actually, I was going to bring that up after. I was, you know, it's a great program what you've you know, brought in to the prisons and what you're trying to do. And I'd like to talk about how Shelf Life was, you know, kind of inspired by Reginald Dwayne Betts and the Freedom Libraries.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of actually happened sort of separately from it. And then I learned about Freedom Libraries and just a little bit about Reginald Dwayne Betts. He was incarcerated at a young age. He writes about this a lot in his memoirs and other things he's published. But when he was serving his time, when he's incarcerated, someone gave him a book. It was a copy of The Black Poets, and he fell in love with writing and poetry, and he credits it with like altering the course of his life. He got really dedicated to writing and reading and found a community of other readers and writers inside. And after when he was released, he has published a memoir and two books of poetry. And the last one is Felon, which Megan can talk about. That was one of the books they used for a lot of book circles. And Linda and Mackenzie, you helped facilitate a book circle with that book. Dwayne started this program it was originally called the Million Book Project, I think, where he wanted to get 1 million books inside correctional facilities. And then it became called Freedom Libraries. And with some support, I believe, from Mellon Foundation, he got a really huge grant to, I hope I'm representing this accurately so someone can fact check me, but he basically, I think, outsourced from a lot of people their opinions on what a core nucleus library would look like for a reader. And they came up with this list of, I think it's like 509 books that are classics and contemporary and philosophy and memoir and poetry. I think a big percentage of those books is actually, I think it's like 10 or 15% are in Spanish language. And so they identified, like, if you're going to create like a desert island nucleus library, like this might look like this. And they worked with an organization in Massachusetts that hires a lot of formerly incarcerated people to build these really beautiful wooden bookshelves. And they've been placing these libraries in housing units for free all over the country. And the thinking is that a lot of residents have to make a choice to go to the library and give up rec time or going to the law library. And by putting them in the housing units, the books are accessible like at a larger part of the day. And I became aware of this and actually helped connect former Deputy Commissioner Ryan Thornell with that project, put them in conversation. And as a result, I think 8 or 10 of those libraries have been installed, maybe more, in correctional facilities around Maine. I don't know, maybe you could talk about your work with Felon and where Dwayne ties into that.
Yeah, absolutely. And just first to pick up, I see the Freedom Libraries when I go in and out. I see them in the Women's Center. I see them. There's one of the shelves in the lobby at, you know, when you go into Maine Correctional Center, the whole shebang, it's right there so that staff can see, visitors can see those books. And it's a really, I just want to big shout out to the folks choosing books. It's a stellar, highly varied collection. Like I always, almost always, I stop and peek at it and I walk away with things to add to my to read list, because it's a really stellar group of books. And those shelves, you can't help but want to touch them. They're beautiful hardwood with this beautiful curve. So I had the opportunity to meet one of the folks who helped install the library in Windham. A formerly incarcerated person. He still had his ankle bracelet on at the time. And it was a really signature moment for him as an installer, to be able to go back into a facility that was not where he was housed and to help install this kind of project. I think that so the ripple effect of these kinds of projects is just really extraordinary. And one of the things that stands out from your telling of Dwayne's story is the way that he got slid a copy of The Black Poets, and part of the revelation was, oh, I can do that. That is a thing. I have a voice too. And I feel like that was one of the gifts he passed along in his book, Felon. Because, you know, when I walked in with that book, I could see that happening in real time. You know, people who had not necessarily engaged with poetry much, like some, but not a lot, suddenly seeing their experience represented or element or pointed at in ways that they hadn't seen before. And so I hear people say even later, oh, like I never liked poetry, except that there are some poets I like. And I feel like that's the critical turn. I feel like that's true for anyone who engages with poetry. Like we can't absorb the ocean of all the poetry, and yet there are poets who speak to us. Like there are people who speak to us and speak in a language that helps us remember we've got voices too. So I feel like Dwayne is one of those people who helps folks find their own, you know, become the person who walks up after a discussion or after hearing a poet read or whatever and says, I wrote something, can I share it with you? And that's like, that's the thing that matters, or one of the many things that matters. But that that feeling that I can write a poem also is just so, so vital.
That was a beautiful way to language that, Megan. Thank you. Now, John, I know you don't have a million books, but we talked that you had 4,000, so you're well on your way. I wonder if you might talk to us a little bit about shelf life. How do people find you if they want to get involved somehow? What is it that you need, and how do they do that?
Yeah, I mean, springboarding off of Freedom, I'm trying to operate in a way that I know the Freedom Library is there, but it's kind of a static group of books. And so I want to provide other books around that that are maybe not represented in that collection, and hoping that it's maybe a gateway to people like picking up other books or finding things they want to read. Yeah, we've got a website that we're developing. It's shelflifeproject.org. That's going to be expanding in the future to have wish lists. And there's articles and reading there about background on like why reading and literacy matters and incarceration and improving reentry and recidivism rates. Yeah, we're always looking for books. We're a little selective about it. We're trying to make sure that we're not getting overwhelmed with books that are damaged or out of date, things that we have too many of. So we're trying to work on getting some guidelines up on the website for donors. But as a real broad category of things that we're looking for, and it's interesting to see what people request. You know, graphic novels are huge. Genre books, you know, sci-fi, fantasy, especially like whole series that people can really sink into, tend to be popular. We also are expanding a little bit. We've done a little bit of this, and I hope to increase this more, but providing musical instruments, things like yoga mats and props. There's been a little bit of providing craft materials, so audiobooks, some DVDs, like media. Definitely kind of branch out to figure out what the needs are and what we can serve. Books are very much primarily at the center of it, but I would point people who are listening to this who want to learn more, reach out to visit shelflifeproject.org, and we can pick up the conversation from there.
That's beautiful, John. Thank you. And I think, you know, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about some of the things that have been going on in terms of access to thoughts and ideas and books within the system and what's really happening with libraries on the inside. And I think that's a conversation that we should have. So, John, can you talk to us a little bit about what you see as the trajectory of prison library, right? In particular on the men's side, because you've watched the evolution of that. And our listeners ought to know, because that means it's even more important to get involved with the Maine Humanities Council and shelflifeproject.org, right, to fill those gaps.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, my experience, it really varies from facility to facility, which was, you know, that was eye-opening to me. Maine Correctional Center has this brand new, beautiful, state-of-the-art, daylit library, you know, like tons of shelving, you know, room to gather there. And they have magazines and DVDs and a lot of things. It's a really incredible library. Alternately, other places are maybe a little more lacking in that. Maine State Prison actually no longer has a central library. It was kind of dissolved a couple of years ago, unfortunately, for a variety of reasons, security and space and funding. Aspirationally, I'm holding out hope that we can someday in the future, we can figure out a way to reconstitute that. But there are two small satellite libraries at Maine State Prison. And up until recently, they have not been allowing books in, but I think we've had some productive conversations lately, and I think those doors are opening back up. I got to tour them. They're pretty small spaces, and the collection is pretty dog-eared, pretty ragged. So we're hoping to sort of refresh and get some new content in there. And yeah, just planting a hopeful seed that maybe somewhere in the future we can figure out a central library at Maine State Prison again. Because I think it's not only just a collection of books, but it's also maybe a place to sit and gather, share ideas, read, have a book club. Tabletop gaming, I know, is popular in some places for people to pass the time or engage with each other. So yeah, I mean, just like in our communities, like libraries play a huge role as a social center. They have that potential to do that as well inside of carceral facilities.
Thank you for that insight, John. And we'll come back to you, Megan, about your experience in coordinating your efforts with libraries on the inside of Maine's prisons. And right now, we're going to go to a break. You are listening to Justice Radio with your hosts, Mackenzie Kelly and Linda Small. And today we're talking with Megan Reedy and John Corton about bringing in the humanities inside Maine's prisons through books, film, poetry, and discussion groups. And so now over to you, Megan. Do you have any insight into how your program works with the libraries inside? I know John mentioned this beautiful library at MCC. For our listeners, that's the main correctional center in Windham, which houses men and women. And right now, the women need to be escorted to that building. And so that means it's not always ready access, right? It is a beautiful space. I've been in that space. But also, how does Maine Humanities Council fill in that gap? Because you're there during discussions. That means people have access to books right in their cells where they can read them. We don't want to call them rooms because I don't like to, you know, sugarcoat it. These are cells. These are concrete cells that people are living in while they're incarcerated. And this is one bright light that both of you are bringing. So go ahead, Nick.
Thank you. Yeah, so at MCC, just a shout out for some of the librarians I work with. The librarian at the Maine Correctional Center is, without her, my work would be so much more difficult. So that the beauty, the order, and the loveliness of that library, I attribute in large part to her and her way of running a library. So I really rely on librarians in a couple of places. She comes to mind because I was just there yesterday. So I rely on libraries where they are. So up at Mountain View, the librarian there is also a really strong ally for me and for the residents I work with. And how our programming fits, I realize it's a little bit. So what we do, like the way that we interact with books, we bring in whatever it is that participants are reading in their group. We bring in a copy of that book for every participant, and that book is theirs to keep and own. You know, the way that a lot of folks do it when they join a book club, they get a copy of the book and they treat that how they do. They dog ear it. They underline things if they want to. They pass it to a friend. They send it to their mom in another state. So our hope is that is to create that feeling like this is a book group and it should work the way that book groups work wherever people are gathering to do this kind of a thing. So it is, and we do see people, you know, then sometimes there are three or four copies. I see three or four copies of a thing folks used and they, you know, they pile up, they get shared. So in that way, we do supplement in multiples, which I think is sometimes interesting, that it's possible, you know, long after the group is done, for a couple people to have read the same book. So that's one thing that's true about how our interaction with books works.
And I think you go a little bit deeper than just an individual interaction with a book, which is obviously so vital to people, but you also train people as facilitators, right? You want to talk a little bit about how that brings light into the prison?
Oh, it is the best fun of my work to go in and work with folks in that training time. So the way it works, we run an interview process, this sort of a similar version to how we would interview any facilitator in Maine. And once we have a small cohort identified at a particular time, we run a 4-session training that starts with, you know, a discussion of a poem. That's what I got to do yesterday at MCC. We had a really dove in talking about a poem. And then from there, we build out some really, we hope, really clear strategies for folks to use to hold this particular kind of discussion. So ways of structuring the time that the discussion is going to take, some ways of helping folks settle in to the discussion, how to kind of close it down, wrap it up so that people feel good, like they, you know, that moment of gathering what you want to hold on to and getting ready to return to the rest of your day. We talk a little bit about troubleshooting. You know, there's always that one person who has like 50 minutes worth to share. How do we handle, like, how do we fold folks in and have a really rich discussion? And one of my favorite things, and I will say too, that the facilitation training we run with folks who are inside is we use the same, we talk about the same strategies, the same kinds of things that we do with all of our facilitators across the state. And one of the things about our our training too, is that we really rely on and hope to nourish and bring out people's own voices. So many of the folks who whom I get to work with as facilitators already have substantial skill at holding groups. They're already recovery coaches or peer mentors, or you know, running the AA group. They're already running other kind, you know, the Dungeons and Dragons group. They're already running, you know, participating in a lot of community building activities. So we really hope to dovetail, amplify the skills people come with.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And it makes me think of a question for both of you. And I'm just wondering what you see or know of the residual effects of what you're doing inside these prisons. Do you get feedback on, you know, what happens throughout the rest of the day, or do people eventually change their perspectives and find new ways to cope through those programs?
Yeah, I benefit from getting feedback from one of my library clerks who's a resident at Mountain View. I want to give a shout out to Michael, who's just been a golden collaborator, like really communicative, but he shares really heartfelt appreciations for the value of like having books come in, being thought out. You know, there's a little bit of a dialogue, like I'm hearing like what his readers want to see and I'm trying to find that content. But like you said, like a book is a piece of pretty simple technology. And that other 23 hours of the day when there's not a film or there's not a program, that's something that can fill out those hours, whether it's just for like diversion or escape, or actually for like intellectual engagement or, you know, history or self-led education. So I think it's one of the beautiful things about a book is it doesn't require, you know, you can in a blackout, you know, if you've got a candle or a flashlight, but like it's something that's not that you can bring back and have in your cell, lend it to, you know, use technology and share it and communicate around it. And it just works so well as a delivery and connecting device.
And for our work, like I have like half a thing to say. And then I would just love to hear from both of you, because I just like, just every time I get onto this Zoom call and see both of your faces who facilitated with us and are, if you like, I don't know, like my heart just gets this big just interacting with you and knowing that we got to meet you a little bit ago. Because the things that stick in my mind are, I think of one person actually who he just didn't talk really very much. He was one of those people with a reputation for quiet. But once he's facilitated with us now for a little while and he won't shut up now. Like he talks. That there's this, you know, having found his way to being at the heart of a room and seeing that work and seeing other people find their voices in his discussion group. You know, he stands a little taller when I interact with him. And I feel like we see little versions of that happening, that anytime a person gains a skill, especially when it's social, there's possibility. But I would really love to hear what you two see with this kind of social thing with books in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, I believe it changed a lot of perspective. I mean, that's the way it felt for me. And it allowed me to get closer to the women that I was in these rooms with, right? People that I might not necessarily talk to on a daily basis, you know, and it really kind of brought me together with people that I wouldn't necessarily talk with throughout the day. And that was a huge change of perspective for me.
Yeah, that's beautiful, Mackenzie. I want to echo that, because that also means talking to people. Like when I had the joy of facilitating an outside book group while I was incarcerated, that also puts me in touch with people I never would. And one of the things that I love about these book projects and film projects that you have is it helps change the narrative, right, of who people are. Many of these films we see are inspirational about other justice and faculty people who are doing brilliant things, or people come in to speak because they care and they want to hear us and they want to know what our thoughts are and share thoughts and ideas with people who may have never been incarcerated or have no connection at all to incarceration. That's a beautiful thing. So for me, it was always a validation of myself as a human being, as someone with their own thoughts and ideas that, you know, gives you the courage to share those thoughts and ideas and receive them back from other people. So that was probably one of the most profound things for me, was in a place of deep isolation, that books and thoughts and ideas, and sharing those are a way to break that cycle, whether you're talking to someone in the next cell over or you're having a conversation with a community member. It's very interesting. I want to know from both of you, is there anything we didn't cover today that you would like our audience to know, either about you, your program, or the people you work with?
Well, just a quick thought off what you said. I remember, Linda, one time I asked you about what books meant to you when you were inside, and you said you love like the big like picture books of like travel and places and animals, and like I hadn't really thought much about that, but those big coffee table books where you could just take some time and not be in that place and have some color and have some different scenery in your life. And that's, I was like, oh, I need to get more of those books in the circulation. So I mean, that I know that's probably a good, that image for me was like really indelible. Like, it's like, not only is it education or escape, but sometimes it's just to like change the scenery and provide the space for someone. Yeah. Again, folks can visit shelflifeproject.org. We'll be fleshing that out with more information, how people can be involved as we move forward. But yeah, I just appreciate kind of this anonymous group of donors and people who've been really generous supporting this, like with their books. I want to sort of honor and appreciate them for contributing to this, and future donors too. I look forward to working with you.
Awesome for us. Yeah. Golly. What to say? Our website is mainhumanities.org. There's more about the discussion project is our current name for our book group programming. So you can find out more about that program as a whole there. And I guess I want to underscore that anyone can apply to host a discussion. We'll bring you a facilitator and get you the books. And there is so much to read about everything, including incarceration and the impacts, including any, like really anything folks want to read. We want to support people reading and talking about things. And I'll also say, because there's not a whole lot visible on our website yet right now about our work in prisons, or like the depth of our intention to support folks who are justice impacted. So also you'll find my email address on that website. Like, please feel free to reach out to me directly, Megan@mainhumanities.org.
That's awesome. Thank you both. And thank you for remembering your books, John. I still have some of them here, and they do transport me to a different place. And sometimes in an area where it is devoid of stimulation, right? Everything is either, you know, it's one color, and there's nothing right there to capture your imagination. To dive into one of those books with color and life and light was just a wonderful thing, whether they were travel books or books about animals from faraway places. That's some of my favorite things. So thank you so both for being here today, Megan and John. And as they said, please visit shelflifeproject.org and mainhumanitiescouncil.org, or go to Megan's email. They'd love to hear from you and get you involved in this work. So as we close out the show, we're going to ask you to visit Justice Radio on WMPG.org for archived episodes that are aired on WMPG, WERU, and WMHE. And a big thank you goes out to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series. Thank you.